On the airplane from Los Angeles to Narita, Japan in 1983, Mary Lou and I met Toshiro. He was from Sapporo, that island, the northern island called Hokkaido. He taught us our first words of Japanese, sayonara, which we already kind of knew, everybody knows that, and konnichiwa, which means hello, but only in the morning. We took the train from Tokyo to the city of Kanazawa on the western coast of Japan, a place known for its harsh weather, a weather system that comes from Siberia. We did not know that at the time. And we only had two words that could be understood. None of our neighbors spoke English. There was only this priest who was from Italy who spoke a bit of English, and some English teachers we met much later. And in that confusion, I remember being on buses going places, and I would be wanting to say words in French or Spanish, and there were no words that I could say. And in all of that, I remembered something from my childhood, that when I was a child living in the Middle East, we lived on this tiny island of Bahrain for 5 years. I had had a dream, or at least this is how I remember it, because we all know about memory. This could not be true at all, but this is how I remembered it, was that as a child, I had had a dream, being surrounded by Arabic, that someday I would be able to speak a language very different from my birth language, so no European languages, that I would be able to speak that language so well that I wouldn't even know that I was speaking that language. It would be that comfortable, and that I would feel so comfortable in that culture that I would hardly notice where I was living. It would just be where I was living. I studied Japanese almost every day. Pretty much I could say I did study every day. I took a notebook out with me and wrote down the words that people said that I didn't understand, that I often didn't write down correctly. I filled practice books learning two phonetic alphabets, hiragana and katakana. And then I had stacks of books filled with Chinese characters. I had to learn 1,000 Chinese characters. And for me, in order to learn that, I had to learn the history of them, because then I could see them as pictures. I learned 1,000 to be able to read newspapers, and then another 4,000 to be able to translate. And when we left Japan, I found these notebooks. They would have stacked as high as this podium. And they were filled with this practice and aphorisms that is the way that children learn. One of those which comes to my mind all the time is shuppai wa seiko no moto. That means mistakes are at the heart of success. And I found that to be true. I learned words by making mistakes, like the time when I wanted to say to someone, if you force them to do that, they will be unhappy. And I said, if you castrate them, they will be unhappy. And the middle of after the castrate word, I remembered going to the veterinarian with our cat with that word in my head. I never forgot it. And the difference between those words is kosei and kosei. I often had dreams during our first years in Japan, which also coincided with leaving the church of my ancestors, feeling completely on the outside of my birth family. I had dreams that I was walking in a forest where there was no light. It was night. There was no moon. There were no stars. And all I knew was that I had to put one foot in front of the other. And a lot of that was exhibited in those piles of notebooks. And then one day, about 10 years, almost to the day after that plane ride from Los Angeles, Mary Lou and I moved from the city to a village in the mountains of Western Japan, and we began life in an old farmhouse. The name of that town was Lucky Field, if you translate it. And lucky, the word lucky or fortune, is actually in Davis Hall. Probably no, and that for me was this wonderful synchronicity, which nobody probably noticed at all. One of those 15 houses was inhabited part-time by a strange professor who vaguely had crushes on both of us and also thought we were missionaries from the United States. He was the professor at a medical university, and he saw in me the fulfillment of his hope to find a translator for his research so that he could publish in English and American journals. So he brought it over to me, and I had translated folk tales, and I was just more interested in literature, not medical papers. But I said to him, I'll do what I can. And he gave me the paper without any explanation of what was in it. And as I was reading through the characters, suddenly the light went on. I understood what he was writing about. Out of the middle of everything that he had written about a Chinese herb, these characters jumped off the page. Methyl-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. He was writing about how to prevent this infection from coming into the hospital, a paper that he was writing jointly with a hospital in China. I felt as if lightning had struck me. All those years of study and moving ahead, when I couldn't see any progress, had brought me to this place when I could read methyl-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. The forest that had been dark suddenly felt like it was filled with light. I could see all kinds of trees, cedars, sweet-smelling polonias, chestnuts, persimmons. And it was around that time that I realized that when I was talking with friends or practicing tea ceremony, I was completely unconscious of speaking a foreign language. I belonged, just as I had hoped in that long ago dream when I was a child. In fact, when they saw me, my friends saw me speaking English when an Australian friend came, they said, "You guys look so funny when you speak English." We lived there for 14 more years. But from that time, when I felt that I had completed something, something big for me, I was able to open up into doing other things. My energy could go elsewhere in new directions. So I'm asking you, this is a strange story. It's my story, and I wonder about your story. Have you ever wanted to do something so much? And I know there are lots of PhDs here, so I imagine this is true, but there are so many other things. I didn't get any letters for what I did. Have you ever wanted to do something so much that you would spend 10 years without knowing that you were achieving anything? I imagine some of you have gone through that with having children. you and your beloved have this desire for a family. You have some image in your mind, that picture over the mantle of all of the happy faces. And then you have a baby, either your own, or you foster, adopt, or comes to you somehow, through marriage, through happenstance, and then everything changes. And so much is demanded of you, long hours, getting up in the night when you hear cries for food or something, the worries you have for their safety and health, driving them, feeling like a taxi driver and an ATM. Anybody here ever felt like an ATM? And then there are those flashes when you see that family emerging, that spot of light that makes those sacrifices seem worthwhile. It all makes sense to you, even if it is just for that moment. And that moment gives you sustenance to keep going on, to keep doing the hard and the fun work of making a family. In my first conversation with the Ministerial Search Committee, and some of you out there remember that conversation, they told me about what you want for this congregation. And there were lots of times for you to give your opinion, and one of the very first things they said, you want the number of children and youth to grow. Does that sound familiar? Okay, that sounds familiar, good, okay. And I think one of the reasons the team thought I would be a good fit is because I served a congregation with a large faith development program. We had sometimes 100 children, and we were able to grow a young adult program from 3 to 30. You might be surprised, though, that my answer to that question was that I thought you needed to open your doors to new members of all ages. I wondered in that desire if there would be a time when a 90-year-old who comes to become part of this might feel like you wished that he or she were 30. And I didn't want that, so that was my answer. And I have taken this charge very seriously. This charge to create room among us for children and youth. Bev Bostrom, the new coordinator, the faith development team, and I have been envisioning about how we can expand the choices and possibilities for children and youth. You caught a glimpse of them during the time for all ages. What are the names of our children? Okay, I think I've heard them. And for the next one, I'm going to challenge you to get to know the names of their parents. I'm going to ask you that next time. Unless somebody could do that. Anybody want to talk about? Okay, Janelle and Kim, parents of who? Noah and Nico, okay? Tony and Eric, parents of Audrey. Fred and Chrissy, parents of Tolliver. Wow, okay. Now we need to have that knowledge spread, okay? Because I've heard from one parent when that person came in and somebody said, are you visiting? Okay, so this is what I've heard. It's important for me to tell you that. You need to know who these parents are and who their children are. And as I have been talking with parents, I haven't had a chance to talk with all of them yet, but when I talked with some of them, one question floated up that I think is very important for us to think about together. That question is, why? Why? Why do you want children and youth in this community? And you have in your order of service this sheet. You have your magic pens. I'm going to give you 1 minute. And so I want you to write on the back of this, why? Why you want more children in this community? And I will let you know with the bell when a minute is up. I sort of lost track, but I think that was a minute. Okay, I would like three, we don't have time, I believe, for everyone, but who would like to share why?
I think it's important for us to be able to remember how to look at life and our choices and our actions through the eyes of the young.
Thank you, thank you. Lou, here you go.
Children are the future of any congregation.
Okay, thank you. Oh, just a moment.
I read it on Facebook, so it has to be true. Children laugh approximately 500 times a day. Adults, 15 to 20. Be like a child and have joy in your heart.
Joy. I saw a choir member, or more than one, probably.
The messages of the faith need to be spread. Children are the future, and what they believe will determine the character of the nation.
I think we need to hear that one again.
The messages of the faith needs to be spread. Children are the future, and what they believe will determine the character of the nation.
Thank you.
I'd like to do a small part in helping children develop wide-ranging opinions and respect for diverse points of view.
Thank you. I love the word help in there.
I want our children to have ways to counteract the fundamentalist views of friends who tell them that they can go ahead and climb in trees because God won't let them be hurt.
Thank you, Judy. And I want you to know when our faith development committee gathered that one thing somebody said, and Janelle, if you remember who it was, let me know. It was, they said, we want our children to be warriors for good. Isn't that marvelous? Wow. Okay. I know that there are a lot of other ideas. So I wrote, I want a community where people of all ages feel a sense of belonging. And then I wrote in kind of the same way, I want our community to be a safe place where children and youth going through difficulties of growing up can feel completely loved and accepted. And as a minister who served all of those children and youth, I want you to know that a congregation can be a place of safety. It can be that place where kids find friends. It gets them farther from those things that parents are so concerned about, those life-threatening things that occur now in both childhood and youth. In two retreats held here for the worship team and the chalice circles, I talked about the spark. That spark within us, and I put my hand here. Because that is the place I learned in Japan. It is called the hara. And it is from the hara that that fire comes in that culture. And in our culture, it might be something else. Wherever that spark comes, catch it. But that, we talked about that mysterious flame that energizes and inspires. And in a minute of silence, we sat and considered our own spark. Every morning, I wait for that spark. I make time to write and listen. I have as many books from those times. I think I have more books from those times than I have those books of writing Chinese characters. I have books filled with questions like, where are you? The song that you heard after I spoke the reading of Hana Sanesh came from that time. Do you ride on clouds in the desert? Can I hear you in the wind? When birds fly halfway across the earth, are they resting in your arms? Those words came a morning I sat up in our home in southern Arizona where migrants were passing so close. And I was holding those questions. When the sky, I'll get it wrong, so I won't give you the last part. But I believe in that spark that we each have access to. That spark, it could be our soul, I don't care what you call it, but it's that spark that gets us out of bed in the morning. And if I don't listen to that spark, it's obvious because I'm grumpy. So if you ever find me grumpy, you could say to me, have you listened to your spark today? But in recent days, I have been writing and writing about how to create a place of belonging for everyone. I look for that spark because I am the only one who can find it. My energy for this work is completely up to me. At least that beginning part of that energy. How many of you have tried to energize or bring hope to someone you love who has lost that hope? Anybody tried to do that? How many people did it work with? There are so many wonderful books of people who have gone through very difficult times, like Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. Do many of you know that book? Where he speaks of Auschwitz and Dachau. My father loved this book, but when he had a series of medical things, not really serious ones, but annoying, horrible ones that decreased the quality of his life, he was miserable. He had no hope. And my mother took out Viktor Frankl and she read out of it to him that he had a choice to be happy. It did not work. He had to find that flame within himself. And here today, if you want a multi-generational community, if the charge you give me truly comes from the center of who you are, you're going to need to find your fire for that dream. Because even with all my experience working with children, integrating them into congregational life, which I love to do, I can't find the flame for you. And you do not want me to be one of those angry fire dart throwers. I don't think you do. And I don't think it will work. So I'm going to really work on not haranguing you about this charge that I have. And I thought when I was going through this, I thought of the words, I need you, we need you. And I thought about how they use this with war. And why can't we use this, we need you, with something that is life-changing? So I am asking you for another minute of your time to listen. And then I want you to fill these out. Write anything that comes to you. My great-grandmother taught me to play chess when she was 85 years old. We are open to receiving your presence. So I would like for just another minute for you to think about, find that spark and where it might lead you. We are not asking for you to go there every single week. We're asking for one or two times in 3 months. And your response, your spark, your energy is going to be the answer to me of, is this the fire that sparks your idea? Is this your dream for this congregation? I'm going to give you just 1 minute. And if you could just pass those into the center, and I will. Could anyone from the choir be willing to just pick those up? Or do I have a volunteer? I have a volunteer in the back. Thank you. So it is my prayer that these sparks give us a way to weave children and youth and their parents into the fabric of this congregation. Let us usher in these times together. I cannot do this alone, neither can Bev and I. We must do this together with the fire of our commitment, that fire that only we can find. Only we know where that is within us. Let us rise in body or spirit and sing.